I wonder if any of you have a nickname. Maybe you had a nickname at school and you don't want anyone to know it now. Nicknames used to be more fashionable in some ways than now. Now you've got to be so PC, you can't be careful what you say to people. I go swimming with Ian, who's sitting at the back here, and there's a person who comes swimming who everyone calls Taffy. And that's because he's Welsh. And I don't know any other name, I just call him Taffy. I say, hello, Taffy, and he says, hello, Colin, back. Sometimes the nickname is just a shortened form of their actual name. So we had four children baptized, like we had with Elspeth, Joanna, Timothy, Rachel, and Bethany. And they're known to everyone as Joe, Tim, Rach, and B. And that's what happens. Names get changed. Sometimes you, if someone's very intelligent, maybe you call them Brain Box or something like that. Or if they're tall, you call them Lanky. And many people, when they grow up, are quite glad to get rid of their nicknames. My wife, Ruth, her maiden name was Murray, so she was known as Murray Mints. Some of you will know that's a sweet you used to suck. In the Bible, there is someone who everyone knows by their nickname, and yet the nickname never appears in the Bible. But if you say to anyone, do you know that one of the disciples was called Thomas? They'll say, oh yes, Doubting Thomas. That's his nickname. And I think if we're honest, many of us doubt. We have all sorts of doubts because we can't see God. And we say, well, we know about God, but still questions about God. Or, you know, I face this situation and I wasn't sure whether God really helped me or not. It's not that I don't believe, because I do, but I do have questions and I do have doubts. And I think everyone is like that. And you need to know that the opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is unbelief. Doubt is asking real questions. Unbelief is refusing to listen to real answers. But doubt is rather like, as the Chinese proverb says, trying to sail down the river with one foot in each canoe. And the danger is you do the splits and you end up sploosh in the water. And this morning we're going to look at the story of Doubting Thomas. And I want to say it's about time we dropped his nickname. Because I'm not sure exactly if it's a fair nickname. So I went to Luke in my Bible this week to find out what I could about Thomas. And Thomas was one of the people that Jesus called to be one of his disciples. His name, Thomas, means in Aramaic, Didymus, which doesn't mean anything to you at all. It means twin. So there was Thomas and his twin brother, twin sister. I don't know, but he or she doesn't appear in the story. It's all about Thomas. He may well have been a fisherman, but we're not sure. But we don't know much about him. We don't know whether he was tall or short or large or not large or anything about him, except that he appears in the story three times. And once was this. Jesus and his disciples were busy telling people about God's love and God's kingdom when sad news came. One of Jesus' special friends, Lazarus, who had two sisters, Mary and Martha, was very ill, and he was quite a way away. And the news came, and nothing happened. And the disciples, although they cared for Lazarus, were actually quite glad nothing happened, because the last time they'd been in Jerusalem, some of the people tried to stone Jesus, and others tried to arrest them. So they thought, ah, Jesus knows it's not safe to go there, so we'll stay here. That wasn't the reason at all. Jesus wanted to do something for Lazarus that would helped the disciples to trust Jesus when life was rock bottom. And after 2 days, he said, right, we're going off to see Lazarus and Mary and Martha. And the disciples said, Jesus, last time they tried to stone you. We don't want to go there. And it was Thomas who said, if he wants to go, we'll go as well, and we'll probably die. In the Winnie the Pooh spiritual personality test, Thomas appears quite high in the Eeyore stakes. But actually, you know, what remarkable courage. He said he would follow Jesus if Jesus wants to go. And if Jesus knows he might die, he's going to go too. I think Thomas deserves a real admiration because his commitment was a commitment to live for Jesus and, if necessary, to die for Jesus. Let's have the second story about Thomas. They're sitting around a meal. It's a great meal. It's just the kind of meal that makes you think this is great, except it wasn't a great meal at all. It had gone wrong from the start when the disciples hadn't washed their feet and Jesus had done it and they all felt wrong faced. It then got worse when Jesus said, now just looking around my close friends, one of you is going to betray me, one of you is going to deny me, and the rest of you are going to run away. That makes for a really cheery evening when you're having a meal. And then as that kind of subsided and they got tucked into their meat and all the rest of it, they were thinking of, you know, this could be the week. This is Jesus who can calm a storm, who can walk in water, who can feed 5,000, who can raise the dead, because that's what happened to Lazarus. And then just when they're beginning to get a better feeling about the evening, Jesus said, actually, I'm about to leave you. What? Where's the PR man when you need him? I'm about to leave you, he said. And it was Thomas who didn't say, well, that's very good. Off you go, master. Who said, hang on there. You're going to leave us just now. And you're going on this journey and you're not telling us where you're going or how we can join you. We've been by your side for 3 years. Because, you see, Thomas was never afraid to ask difficult questions. He didn't put on a spiritual voice and say, we don't ask awkward questions. He said, look, this is ridiculous. We've all come here. We're in the middle of a dangerous situation. You could deliver us from the Romans, and you say you're going walkabouts. And Jesus said one of the most important things he ever said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. And Thomas, who was willing to die for Jesus, was willing also to ask the searching questions of Jesus, which brings us neatly to the third and final story. Because, you see, if you were here last Sunday, you will remember that although the close followers of Jesus had heard that against all expectations, the tomb where the body of Jesus had been laid was empty, although they had heard that some of the women had met Jesus, women, they said, unenlightened souls, they were still behind one locked door, two locked doors, scared that some would come knocking on the door. And then Jesus appeared, and they were just gobsmacked, to use a original Greek phrase. And they couldn't believe it, but one of them was missing. Thomas had gone off to have a private pity party. He just couldn't face the company of anyone. His best friend was dead. The person he had put 3 years of his life into was gone. And so I can imagine that after Jesus disappeared again, maybe it was Andrew, good Scotsman, well, not really, but we'll pretend, pulled open the first lock, pulled open the second lock, went running down the street and burst in and said, Thomas, Thomas, we've seen him. Seen who? Jesus, he's alive. And Probably Thomas said, yeah, yeah, and you've seen Elvis Presley in Burger King. I believe that also, if Elvis Presley had been around in those days. And he said, listen, my heart's been broken. The person who mattered most to me died in the most awful way. Don't come with your cheer-up stories. I'm not having it. I couldn't let my heart be broken twice. But he has. And it says in the version that we read, they went on and on telling him. Dee, 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 dee. He wasn't listening. And so, a week later, for some reason, Thomas had rejoined them, probably because he wasn't a good cook and they were arranging for the cooking. And they were in there together. And it was one of these awkward situations. You know these awkward situations? Let me give you an example. Imagine you're in a room where there are 10 heart supporters and one Hibs supporter. And imagine that Hearts have just beaten Hibs 5-0. Can't imagine that ever happening. And the Heart supporters are friendly with the Hibs supporter and don't really want to go on about it, even though they keep thinking, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the Hibs supporter says, if you mention football again, you've had it. That's the kind of scene, because the 10 want to talk about Jesus being alive, and Thomas says, don't dare bring that up again. I'm not believing it. And then suddenly, there's Jesus. And he says to Thomas what he'd said to all the disciples the week before. Peace be with you. Now, Thomas had said to the others, unless I put my finger in the holes in his hands and put my hand in the side where the spears him, I will not believe. And Jesus, who hadn't been there as far as Thomas knew, said exactly, saying, okay, Thomas, here we are. Here's my hands. Here's my side. Touch and see. It was too much for Thomas. And he didn't go and touch and see because he knew it was real. Instead, he did something which had never been done by any of the followers of Jesus. He was the first one to fall down before Jesus and use two names that he and his friends only ever used for God, for Jesus, my Lord and my God. The Thomas who'd been willing to die for Jesus, the Thomas who didn't want Jesus to go away if he couldn't follow, now saw that his Jesus was not just a leader among leaders, a prophet among prophets, a miracle worker among miracle workers. For someone to have survived, no, to have conquered death, was none other than God himself, my Lord and my God. And Jesus, who loved him and knew that actually his doubts were exactly the same as the disciples themselves had felt a week earlier, when they needed to be convinced that it was Jesus. Poor old Thomas, he gets the bad press. I think probably the press agents were the other 10 disciples. But actually, he didn't doubt any more than any of us do, who says, I need to know. If I'm going to follow Jesus, I need to know that it makes sense, that it's real, that it's worth doing. And Jesus said, and here's now speaking to you, all of you, even those sucking sweets and even those dozing off, he says, Thomas, you've believed because you've seen. Blessed are those who have never seen and yet believed. And for 2,000 years, the church has been made up of men and women who have never seen Jesus physically, but believe with all their heart that Jesus died for them on a cross and rose again and is present with us now. When the bottom falls out of our world, when there are big questions we want to ask, when we long for it to be true and are terrified that it may not be. And Thomas left that room that was locked, and he went to Iran and Persia and to India. And I've worshipped in the Ma Thoma Christ's church, the church that was founded by Thomas. And he died as a Christian near Chennai in AD 75, having for 45 years told people wherever he found, he is Lord and he is God. He is my Savior and my friend. And I think that's better than a tin of baked beans, don't you? Let's have our closing hymn as we bring our service to a close. Our closing hymn is about God's faithfulness. God was faithful in Jesus to Thomas. He will be faithful to Elspeth and to Claudia and to Gabriel. He'll be faithful to their great granny Margaret in Aberdeen. Great is thy faithfulness.